Today on Maine Calling, what's happening with deportations in Maine? The Trump administration vowed to carry out unprecedented mass deportation of migrants starting day one after the president's inauguration in January. In the months since, data from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, show dramatic changes in immigration enforcement. Border crossings are way down. Arrests and detentions are way up across the country. What's the situation in Maine? I'm Cindy Hahn. The nationwide pattern of arrests, detentions, and deportation of migrants is on the rise in Maine. We'll discuss who's at risk, how many are affected, and what legal rights are at stake. And we'll hear from some immigrant community leaders about how this climate of enforcement is having a chilling effect across the state. The impacts of mass deportation here in Maine. Coming right up on Maine Calling.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The effects of the Trump administration's sweeping mass deportation plans are being felt across the country. Today, we'll learn what immigration enforcement looks like in Maine and what the repercussions are. My guest is Melissa Brennan, co-legal director with the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. And we invite you to join the conversation. Do you know of anyone who has been arrested or detained or deported? What questions do you have about how the enforcement process works? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And Melissa, thank you so much for joining today. I'm going to start off by asking you to set the scene for us of what's happening nationwide. Give us some context as far as where things stand with immigration enforcement across the country. Are you seeing major shifts in the pace, the nature of what the Trump administration is prioritizing, and what's actually being carried out?
Yeah, Cindy, hi. Thank you so much for having me on today. Absolutely. Since January, there have been sweeping changes in immigration law and policy. Most notably, there has been an enormous increase in the number of arrests and detentions of non-citizens across the country. And, you know, for a long time, the Department of Homeland Security has had immigration enforcement priorities that targeted people who might actually pose some kind of public safety concern. But really what we're seeing now is broad, indiscriminate immigration enforcement across the board with daily quotas. And in practice, what that means is the federal administration is essentially targeting everyone. That includes people in lawful status, people in lawful processes, people with valid work permits and no criminal history are all being swept up in this effort to detain and deport immigrants.
Okay, and what about the impact of the massive increase in federal funds toward immigration enforcement? How significant is that? Are we already seeing increases in activity due to that funding?
We expect to see significant increases. What has already happened since January has been a very significant ratcheting up of these arrests, detentions, and deportations. And unfortunately, things are only going to get much, much worse with the recent passage of the budget reconciliation bill just last month, which dedicates an unprecedented level of federal funding to basically power this deportation machinery. So I think, you know, it's fair to say that things are really only just beginning and are going to get much, much worse.
Okay, well, lots more to talk about with you, Melissa. But first, let's go also to our Maine Public colleague, Ari Snyder. He's here to talk about what he's been seeing and hearing in his coverage of immigration enforcement in Maine. Ari is a news reporter and All Things Considered host for Maine Public Radio. Thanks for calling, Ari. Oops, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, yeah, Ari. Hey, go ahead. What are you seeing? We know that immigration enforcement has escalated nationwide, as Melissa was saying. In your reporting in Maine, you've been keeping an eye on those arrest numbers. So tell us more about that. Are arrests on the rise here, and who's making those arrests?
Through early June, ICE arrests were up about 50% in Maine in terms of a daily average compared to last year. That's based on data from the Deportation Data Project, which basically compiles all this federal arrest data from ICE and from Customs and Border Protection. So according to that data, is about 100 people had been arrested by ICE starting from Trump's inauguration through early June. And again, that worked out to about a 50% increase in average daily arrest rates. Interestingly, most of those people arrested by ICE, according to this data, did not have criminal convictions. About 80% of those had not been convicted of a crime. Many had pending charges, others had no charges. So that's ICE. And so by all accounts, Border Patrol is arresting far more people. And I'm sure your guests could clarify that and speak to that more as well. But Border Patrol says it arrested over 100 people just in the month of April alone, right? So that's just 1 month. And that was the highest monthly total of arrests in nearly 25 years. Again, that's according to Border Patrol's press people. To clarify the difference here between Border Patrol and ICE, Border Patrol is charged, of course, with enforcing immigration law along the border, as the name suggests. They are allowed broad authority to operate within 100 miles of the border, which includes the coast. So that really covers the whole state of Maine. And being a border state, Maine has had a long and pretty robust Border Patrol presence. They've got offices, you know, in different parts of the state. ICE, on the other hand, charged with enforcing immigration law in the interior of the country. And from what I understand, ICE has a much smaller presence in Maine. And some of the recent ICE arrests that we've seen in Maine have actually been conducted by agents from Boston, according to some of the press releases we get about that. Of course, the agencies do work together in the sense that many people arrested by Border Patrol do get transferred into ICE custody. And so when it comes to the Border Patrol,
This is helpful.
I was just saying, when it comes to the Border Patrol arrests, some of those do result from Border Patrol initiating traffic stops on their own, investigating individual people. Border Patrol will claim, you know, that some of the people they've arrested are affiliated with Latin American gangs. It's kind of hard to get more information, more specific information about those people to understand exactly sort of what those affiliations look like. But in many cases I've reported on, it's actually been local law enforcement initiating a traffic stop or responding to a minor traffic incident and then calling Border Patrol when they have a question about the immigration status of someone involved in that incident, even if the person, you know, has no criminal record in the U.S. So as an example, a couple months ago, I spoke with an asylum seeking man who earlier this year says he was involved in essentially a fender bender in Oxford. Local police responded. They sorted out the sort of minor traffic incident. And then they ended up calling Border Patrol, who then arrested this man for allegedly not being here legally, even though he says he's been, you know, pursuing an asylum claim. The man runs a contracting business, ended up spending about a month in ICE custody out of state. He was eventually released on bond, but he says that month in jail really cost him a lot of business because many of his clients effectively thought that he'd just disappeared. So just one more thought on that. The state legislature this year did pass a bill to try to restrict that sort of informal cooperation. Governor Mills has decided to hold that bill over to the next legislative session. She has some concerns that it's too broad and confusing.
Okay, so what would it have done if it weren't stalled out right now, that bill?
Yeah, so basically it was trying to make it a little more, trying to sort of separate the responsibilities of local law enforcement and federal law enforcement, and really saying that, like, if local law enforcement stops someone for speeding or some other local issue, if there's no specific reason to involve immigration agents, that they shouldn't do that, right? That local police should handle the local issue. If it's speeding, if it's, you know, a tail light out or something, that they should handle the local thing and not not sort of proactively involve Border Patrol. And, you know, there was a lot of pretty emotional and contested testimony in the State House about this year. And many representatives from law enforcement said that this would be overly burdensome and it would really, you know, sort of hamper their ability to cooperate with other agencies.
Okay. And just to go back to the cases you were citing of people being arrested for minor traffic violations, and as you said, a lot of these folks do not have a criminal record. So can you kind of tease out how are they being targeted as they get, are they getting pulled over because someone sees the color of their skin, or once they're pulled over, they hear an accent and then, you know, raise questions about them? Like, what's the trigger there?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really speak definitively to that. That would be a question for lawyers. I mean, some of the lawyers I've spoken with have certainly raised concerns that their clients were being profiled. In some cases, it's people will hand over an ID from out of state, and that will raise some questions. And it will come up in conversation that they're not from the U.S. And people will, you know, the local law enforcement agents will sometimes just involve Border Patrol at that point.
Okay, and I'll go to Melissa with that question in a moment, but I just wanted to ask you one more question, Ari, because I understand that you have found that many in the immigrant communities in Maine are just wary of talking about whether someone they know has been arrested or detained or deported. And why is that?
That's a good question, Cindy. And of course, many of our listeners will have heard about some of the more high-profile cases that have happened recently where there was the Cumberland County Jail Corrections Officer who's from the Congo who was arrested, Old Orchard Beach Police Officer from Jamaica who was also arrested recently. Both of those were ICE arrests. ICE says they arrested them after they tried to purchase firearms. ICE is accusing both of them of overstaying visas. But most of the arrests that are happening in the state are not high-profile cases, in part because the people involved and their families really do not want to make them, you know, high-profile cases. People are just so concerned to speak publicly for fear that it would draw any extra attention to themselves, for fear that it could harm the legal situation of their loved ones or for themselves. This is something, again, I'm sure Melissa and others will be able to speak to more directly, but just the level of fear and anxiety I'm hearing from people across multiple immigrant communities right now is just very, very high. You know, of course, no one community is a monolith. Everyone is experiencing this quite differently. But the fear of arrest and deportation is really, really present for a lot of people right now.
Sure. Well, thank you for following this and for your good reporting, Ari, and for calling in today. Ari Snyder is a news reporter and host with Maine Public Radio. So, Melissa, I wanted to follow up on some of the things that Ari was saying, as he mentioned when I asked him about, you know, how are these folks being targeted in the first place? Do you get a sense of that from your work at ILAP?
Yes, absolutely, Cindy. We receive all sorts of calls and inquiries from members of local communities, and also actively provide legal assistance to individuals detained by immigration officials within the state of Maine. And Ari's exactly right. A big, big part of the story of what's happening in Maine right now involves state and local law enforcement diverting their resources to assist the federal government in carrying out this mass deportation agenda. And so what this looks like in practice is state and local law enforcement stopping brown and black drivers for minor driving-related infractions, and then turning those drivers and passengers over to immigration officials based on their immigration status or assumptions about their immigration status. And here at ILAP, over the past few months, we have documented at least 17 minor traffic-related stops across the state where Maine residents and workers have been handed over by state and local law enforcement to immigration officials based on their perceived immigration status or information obtained about their status. And these are just the stops that ILAP knows about. These stops have occurred across the state. And just to give you an example of the types of issues that come up, the infractions cited have ranged from a driver having snow on the roof of their car, a driver driving in the passing lane, someone pulled over for driving just 5 miles over the speed limit. So these are things, you know, none of which would typically raise suspicion of normal traffic enforcement. And of course, this type of pattern strongly suggests racial profiling and decisions being made, you know, about a person's immigration status, an assumption made about their status. So again, means local and state law enforcement resources are being diverted in this way, away from real criminal justice and public safety issues, with really devastating human impacts. You know, to give one example, we recently worked with a young asylum seeker at ILAP who, someone who had done everything right. He had applied for asylum, he had a work permit and was working, was stopped by local police for a minor driving issue. It was something so trivial that prosecutors declined to file any charges. But that didn't matter because of the way that immigration enforcement works. He was turned over into immigration custody and spent the next 3 months in immigration detention while ICE then tried to deport him. And you know, Ari started to touch a bit on, you know, the impact that enforcement has on this type of immigration enforcement has on local communities. You know, this is a young man who was thriving in our community. He managed a cleaning crew at a local company that sanitizes food production equipment, a job that many people don't want and one that he really did with excellence. And his arrest shocked his employer, who reached out to ILAP to ask how they could help. And although we did succeed in getting him out of immigration detention, in those months when he was unjustly detained, his car was impounded. He came within days of being evicted. His life was, you know, dismantled. And that's not because he posed any danger to our communities, not because he did anything wrong, but because of this indiscriminate way in which immigration laws are being enforced. And again, the ways in which local and state law enforcement are cooperating with federal officials.
All right, let's go to a caller now. This is Brenda calling in from Portland. Hi, Brenda. What did you want to tell us about?
Hi. I was driving through Daring Oaks this morning about 10:15, 10:20, and I saw two unmarked vehicles pulling over a car, a red car with a black man in it. The men jumped out, and they had civilian clothes on, tactical vests, you know, like the bulletproof vest that wrote "Red Police." No other identification, no identification on the vehicles. They pulled him out of his car, handcuffed him, put him in the vehicle. I videotaped some of it. I got the license plate, and I'm trying to figure out how to let his family just know that he was just abducted.
Well, Brenda, let's see what Melissa might say about this situation, since you don't know the whole story, right? But there is something going on there. Melissa, what would you say?
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in and for opening your eyes to this disturbing incident. We receive calls about incidents like this regularly here at ILAP, and it's just incredibly disturbing. Just want to first validate that. On a practical level, it can be very challenging to follow up on a report like this. What we have seen in the past many months is like nothing I've ever seen before in my career as an immigration lawyer, where people are detained on the roadside in this way and are incredibly difficult to locate. That can be the case, that people are simply, their whereabouts are unknown, sometimes for days at a time. In our office, we frequently request the assistance of local congressional offices. We contact immigration officials at CBP, at ICE. We look in jails where we know that immigration officials use bed space to try to find people and help to connect them with legal help and let their families know what's happening. But unfortunately, it's not a straightforward process. There's a lot that happens in the shadows, without transparency and without oversight. So very, very troubling. I would just note that ILAP and the local Refugee and Human Rights Clinic at the University of Maine School of Law, we have an ongoing collaboration through which we provide legal information and legal help to immigrants who are detained within the state of Maine. So if that person who you saw, Brenda, does end up being detained within the state, it is very likely that someone from our team will be able to connect with them and see if there is additional legal help that we can provide. I would also note that, you know, a troubling part of all of this, the way that detention and deportation is happening right now, is that immigration officials are moving quickly to move immigrants away from their communities. Out-of-state transfers have become a part of this deportation machinery, where a person arrested by immigration officials today in Portland may be shipped to the other side of the country and detained far from family members, far from any lawyers who they might have previously worked with, making it that much harder for detained immigrants to exercise their rights.
Well, thank you for calling, Brenda, and thanks for that answer, Melissa. We do need to take a quick break right now. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We're learning about the status of immigration enforcement in Maine, from arrests to detentions to deportations. What is the role of law enforcement, and what are the legal rights of those who are being targeted? We invite you to join the conversation and tell us what you think is the most effective way to address immigration enforcement. My guest today is Melissa Brennan. She is the co-legal director with the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project, or ILAP. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Betsy Paz-Gameshi. Is that right, Betsy?
Yes, you got it.
Okay, great. Spanish family and community engagement specialist. She is with the Portland Public Schools Multilingual and Multicultural Center. Betsy, thank you for giving us a call. Can you explain how, as a Spanish-speaking teacher, you have found yourself directly involved with assisting those who have been arrested or detained?
Well, first of all, I do work for Portland Public Schools, not in the capacity of a teacher. I work as an interpreter and an engagement specialist. So I do enrollments and I help families acclimate, you know, learn the school system here in this country. So I do a lot of kind of general connecting them to resources. A lot of the times the families know me well. So if there's an issue, I'm the first person they kind of meet when they connect to school. They will call me if someone has been detained. So I tend to reach out a lot to Melissa. And I work also a lot with the law clinic over at the law school.
So you're directly in touch with people then, and you have, can you share anything about what you're seeing and hearing in terms of why people were detained and what happens to them after that?
It's a lot of what Melissa is saying. I'm having a lot of our parents, you know, on the way to work early in the morning or coming home that are just being, you know, pulled over. A lot of them are doing roofing work, construction work. So it's devastating, because it's like Melissa says, that I'm scrambling trying to find where this person is. The family is now left without, you know, one of the main breadwinners. So it's, and the stress and the anxiety of not knowing where that person is. It's stressful. We're seeing a lot of the impact in school of how students are feeling.
Right. You're somebody who's around young people. Give us a sense of what concerns you have about these high school students or even the younger kids.
I will tell you, high school students in particular, I'm struggling with that this summer. Many are contacting me with not wanting to go back to school. It's the fear of, it's feeling hopeless. Many of the students have told me, you know, they're questioning their purpose of going to school here because they feel their futures in this country are uncertain and unattainable. In regards to like some of our younger kids, they, you know, kids who went from loving school, they're afraid to leave their parents for fear that they might come home and not see their parents. So we're seeing a lot of anxiety a lot of worry, hopelessness, and from really young ages, from, you know, pre-K up, it's really a problem.
Well, thank you for sharing your experiences and for what you're doing. That was Betsy Paz Gameshi with Portland Public Schools. She helps Spanish-speaking communities and families through her work. Thank you, Betsy. And we have, let's see, calling in now, we have Sheriff Kevin Joyce on the line with Cumberland County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Joyce, thanks for calling in today.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Good. And I wanted to talk to you because you obviously have been in the news for the fact that the Cumberland County Jail is holding people who have been detained by ICE, and the numbers of those in detention at the jail are much higher now than in the past. I understand maybe 60 to 65 a day. And as sheriff, you've been criticized for what people say is enabling or being complicit with ICE by taking in people that have been arrested. So I just wanted to hear what you have to say to respond to those charges.
Yeah, so we haven't changed anything we've done in the last 30 years. As I tell people, for about 15 years under the old Immigration Naturalization Service, I worked part-time while I was working full-time with the sheriff's office. So I would go to pick people or house there.
Whoopsie, we're losing you a little
bit. You know, the reality. Can
you hear me? It's coming in and out. I don't know if you can move a little bit or something. We'll see if it gets better.
Or try now?
Yeah, that sounds better. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we haven't changed in the 30 years that I've worked with the sheriff's office. We house federal inmates, whether it's U.S. Marshals or ICE inmates. That's been pretty consistent. The numbers ebb and flow with the administration's in power at the time. But the reality is, under state law, I'm required to accept every arrest that comes through. And under MDOC, it's the same thing. So we have not changed. The tactics of ICE and obviously meeting their quota system has changed, which has caused us to have more ICE inmates. But as I tell people as well, it's not an infinite number of beds that we have. It's a finite number of beds, and when they're full, they're full. And we're pretty close to being full, so I don't see the numbers creeping up any more than maybe 70.
Okay, and what would be the alternative if you were not providing spots for those in detention?
Well, I think they would go to other jails. I know that some of the other jails have handled some of the arrests, et cetera. Other than that, then I guess they would be shipped out of state because there's no federal holding facility in the state of Maine. The closest one is Gorham, New Hampshire, or Massachusetts. So clearly they'd be shipped out of the state of Maine if we did not hold ICE inmates. The good part for having them is those who are here, they get quick access to ILAP, the University of Southern Maine Law School, et cetera. And we try to work with them to make sure that they get quick access as much as we possibly can.
All right. Well, I know you're in the field and the sound is a little iffy, so I'll let you go, Sheriff. But thanks so much for giving us a call. That is Kevin Joyce. He is Sheriff of Cumberland County. And Melissa, when Sheriff Joyce was saying, you know, ILAP is able to help folks, there is a challenge, though, right, that when they are coming through the jail for detention, they're often being moved from one state to another fairly quickly. Is that an issue?
That is absolutely an issue. And I guess just to take a step back, you know, I would want to make clear first and foremost that ILAP is opposed to immigration detention in and of itself. It's a needless and cruel practice. But as long as it continues, our priority as an organization is making sure that detained individuals can meaningfully exercise their legal rights. And so when people with ties to Maine are detained here within our state, we do our utmost to provide legal services to them. As has been mentioned a few times in this program today, people are frequently transferred outside of the state and sometimes transferred to remote locations. And when people are held far from home, they often lose access to legal counsel, to their families, to support networks. At ILAP, we have had this happen with clients and clients, potential clients who we had hoped to serve, who have been transferred by ICE outside of the state to far-flung locations. In such a way that it's impeded our ability to have an effective attorney-client relationship. So it's a very problematic practice. And we believe it is very intentional. These transfers are executed in a way where it is intended to isolate immigrants and deprive them of the opportunity to have family support and have the assistance of an attorney in preparing their legal case.
Okay, we'll go to a call now from Heather calling from Warren. Go ahead, Heather. Heather, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. What did you want to say?
Okay, well, a couple things. One is in response to, I'm afraid I'm echoing. I'm trying to not.
I think it's coming across fine on our end, so you might be hearing an echo, but it's okay.
Okay. The caller, Brenda, was wondering how she could contact, like what she should do with the video footage of the kidnapping. And my thought is the more widely people can spread videos via social media, the more it's possible that someone will see them who can intervene and help out and who knows the person involved. I feel like, you know, with all the negative things that you could say about social media, one of the positives is how much people are sharing information about things like ICE kidnapping.
Thanks for that suggestion, Heather, using social media as a tool. Melissa, and you had also mentioned how you and also the Human Rights Refugee and Human Rights Center at Maine Law are collaborating on this. There are resources for people who are looking for a family member or friend who has been detained, right?
Yes, it's certainly something we regularly provide guidance to community members on and helping to locate loved ones. ICE does maintain an online tool. It's called the ICE Detainee Locator, which is often the way that family members who've had a loved one go missing are able to track down that loved one's whereabouts. Unfortunately, though, there may be days, many days, with no information, which, as you can imagine, is incredibly scary and upsetting to those involved. Again, we also frequently turn to the support of local congressional offices, asking for their assistance in contacting federal officials to find out where people have been taken, because the reality is, yes, people are being essentially disappeared and are picked up roadside, and their whereabouts may be unknown for days at a time.
Okay, well, joining us now is Keiko Torres, Director of Community Health and Wellness for Presente Maine. Thanks for calling, Keiko.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You may have heard we're trying to get a sense of who is at risk of being approached by Border Patrol to be questioned or arrested. From your work with Presente, is there any indication that they are focusing more on the Latino immigrant community in Maine?
Well, I think that it's very hard to dispute the fact that there is racial profiling happening in terms of the current rise in deportations and arrests. They are targeting work vans. They are targeting folks at gas stations in their work vans at job sites. And as it was mentioned before, a lot of the, for example, traffic stops or infractions are things that folks, you know, usually wouldn't be stopped for, that wouldn't lead to something like this. And those are increasing and happening with impunity. So it's easy to say that, yeah, there is a bit of a racial profiling, and folks that someone could say looks or appears to be Latina are at higher risk for these traffic stops and for being attacked at their job sites.
Okay. And have you heard many direct reports from people within the community about friends or family members who were arrested or detained or even deported?
Yes, absolutely. We also have relationships with folks who are in other states that have organizations or companies that send workers to Maine and vice versa. And when we see those arrests, we're looking at not just the one person, we're looking at, you know, perhaps vans full of people, you know, up to six, up to 12 folks that are being detained. And that's a lot of different families who are being directly affected. That number goes up. It's harder, as we have mentioned, it's hard to find folks once they are in the system. Even using the detainee locator, information changes, people get separated. Even from one arrest, some folks will be sent one place, other folks will be sent to another. And it's a lot of labor to try to find these folks and to try to get them representation and see where they are with their cases.
And how is this climate of fear affecting daily life for the community here in Maine? And is it getting worse?
The fear that our community faces was something that was just incredibly palpable from the very beginning. At the beginning of this year, under the new presidential administration, we were affected immediately here in our programming at Presente. So at Presente, we serve the Latinx population here in southern Maine. And we, for example, one really concrete example is we run a food pantry. And pretty much immediately we had to stop our operations because folks did not feel safe coming to get something as simple and necessary and vital as free food to feed their families. We had to move our program from a pantry where folks would come in and shop for their food to a mobile program and have to deliver our food to folks' houses directly so that they could be safe and still access the basic needs that they have. Folks are afraid. I think some people mentioned of going to sending their kids to school. They're afraid of signing up for benefits for fear that, you know, ICE is now having access to DHS information, fear of going to doctor's appointments, fear of law enforcement for things such as when they are victim of crimes or abuse. They're afraid to report because they do not feel that law enforcement is safe for them.
Well, thank you for sharing some of that information with us and for joining us today. Keiko Torres is with Presente Maine, and we do need to go to another quick break. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. What are your questions about mass deportations and how that is playing out in Maine? What actions do you believe are needed to address immigration enforcement? With me is Melissa Brennan, and she is with the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. We'll go now to a caller. This is from Wells. Gary is calling in. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yes, this is Gary Lennox. I lived in Wells for the last over 40 years. And we apparently are the only place in the state of Maine that has a signed contract with ICE, our police officer in our town. I want to make it clear that our police department and Chief Putnam has done a great, great, great job for us, and we totally support them. We just think that it's simply a mistake. We have over 900 signatures from people who live in Wells asking us to withdraw from this contract. And we have met with the town manager and the chief of police, who have been very thoughtful in meeting with us. And we just happen to disagree. We have standouts in front of the police department three or four times a week. And this Sunday, we are going to do a sunrise to sunset standout right in front of the Wells Police Department and Fire Department with signs just asking that we withdraw from this contract. So I wanted people to know.
Gary, can you help us understand a little bit what Chief Putnam is saying as the reasons why they don't want to drop the contract?
Well, as far as I understand, I think to talk with her, she has explained to us that she thinks that the training that her police officers have gotten are invaluable, and that the town did not have to pay for it, so that there was invaluable training. that she thought was a good reason. She also says that if we don't have this contract, we would have to stay on the side of the road with people who may get arrested until ICE comes. And this seems to be quite a dispute because we do not think that this is actually accurate. And looking into this specific reason why. So,
okay. Well, thank you for describing what's happening in Wells. Melissa, can you comment on what Gary's describing?
Yes, thank you. I guess just to take a step back and clarify, what's in place in Wells is what is called a 287G agreement. And these agreements are really a central part of the current administration's immigration agenda. These 287G agreements authorize local law enforcement to carry out federal civil immigration enforcement. So they essentially give local police the power to double as ICE agents in their own communities. And as the caller mentioned, Maine has just one active 287G agreement, and that's in Wells. At least one other locality has entertained a possible 287G agreement and backed down in response to very strong community opposition. And these agreements have been around since the 1990s. There's a much bigger push for them happening right now. And there is a substantial body of evidence showing that these 287G agreements cause great harm to communities. They're entirely funded by local taxpayers, and they really undermine public trust, especially among immigrant communities who naturally, when police are involved in enforcing immigration laws, immigrant community members become all the more fearful of reporting crimes or cooperating with law enforcement. And the result is communities that are less safe for all of us. 287G agreements also increase the risk of racial profiling, can lead to costly litigation for localities and further strain local budgets. And economically, towns with these agreements often suffer as well. Immigrants leave or may avoid settling in these areas and may avoid working in these areas altogether.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your call, Gary. Let's go to Martha calling from Portland. Go ahead, Martha.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. I understand you're with HOPE-X. Tell us what you do.
Sure. I'm the executive director of HOPE-X. We're a nonprofit in Portland that serves asylum seekers, and we have been seeing exactly what everyone on the show has been describing. We have about 20 clients that we know of who have been picked up by ICE or Border Patrol.
And tell me what resources people can turn to.
Well, it is extremely difficult. ILAP and the law school are doing a fabulous job with their limited resources. We spend a lot of our time working with many partner organizations, trying to figure out how to support both the individual and the affected family when someone is picked up. In our experience, it's usually a man, and often, as everyone else has described, on their way to work, coming home from work. And the harm that's being done to that individual, but also the family and the community, is enormous. So there's a lot of fundraising efforts going on, trying to raise money for bond funds and commissary funds. And then on the other side, the federal government is tearing apart the system. So lots of immigration judges have been fired. So we're seeing not only this terrible injustice of people getting picked up for doing absolutely nothing wrong, people, as Melissa said, who've had no interaction with the police, and then the courts are being decimated. So it's taking that much longer for people to even get through the process.
Well, thank you for sharing what you do at HOPE-X and for calling in, Martha. Melissa, you know, we heard from Martha and many others this idea of people getting picked up for doing absolutely nothing wrong. But I do have to ask the kind of the original issue of this whole effort for mass deportation is if someone's here illegally, they shouldn't be. And that's the argument that many make, that, you know, it's rightful or it's legal to carry out these deportations in some cases. So what is your response to those who say, you know, people just need to do things the right way and then they won't have these problems?
Yes, thanks, Cindy. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the circumstances of folks who are being targeted for detention. Many, many of those targeted here in Maine have followed lawful processes to apply for asylum and have been granted permission by the federal government to work. And this has been a real shock to local communities. What we're seeing is people who have done everything right. They have followed the rules of the asylum process. They asked for asylum at the border. They have submitted a formal asylum application in a timely manner. And as a reminder, asylum is a life-saving humanitarian protection for people whose lives are in danger in their home countries. These folks, after applying for asylum, apply for and receive work permits. Many have started working, are paying taxes, and are contributing to our local communities. And then, while awaiting adjudication of their asylum claim, they are suddenly arrested without warning. So I guess I would say these current enforcement policies, if they can be called that, are extraordinarily inhumane and cruel and have no legitimate underlying public policy basis. They ultimately destabilize our communities and by extension harm our economy, our workforce, and make all of us much less safe.
Okay, Nate is calling in also from Wells. Hi, Nate. What did you want to say?
Hi, yes. I'm with the Maine Democratic Socialists of America. We had a comrade, Ahmad, abducted in Old Orchard Beach on the 29th outside of the Hannaford. We have successfully raised funds to help support his legal defense, but he's since been trafficked through the Cumberland County Jail to a facility in Plymouth, Massachusetts. We defend our members. We defend our members' families. If you are afraid of the Trump regime, like, coming for you, and I think, you know, we all should be to some extent, we're stronger together. DSAUSA.org/join. Connect with us. We can help defend you. DSAUSA.org/join. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Nate. We have a couple quick questions here on email about ICE agents wearing masks. Can we prevent ICE from masking in Maine? Because it's terrifying. Are they wearing masks? And that's been an issue about whether that, you know, impinges on people's rights. So, Melissa, what do you think of this issue of the mask wearing?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's an issue that's getting a lot of national attention. It's something new. It's something very scary. The photos that have circulated in the media of masked men making arrests on the roadside, in courthouses. I'm not sure about local legislation to address the issue here in Maine, but just want to validate that it is incredibly disturbing, and law enforcement should not feel a need to hide their faces if they are, you know, carrying out laws properly.
And I know that ILAP has made a big effort to get the word out to immigrant communities that they do have legal rights, and you have an actual Know Your Rights summary for what to do if they do get approached, either at home, in their workplace, if they get stopped in public. What are some of the key rights, and do you try to get people to just memorize those and state them when they get approached by Border Patrol?
Yeah, and I'd love to just speak more broadly about, like, what immigrant communities and community members can do right now. It's true that since late last year, all of us at ILAP have been working really hard to empower local communities with Know Your Rights information, including the right to remain silent and the right not to open your door to law enforcement unless they have a warrant. We just also need to be honest about what we're seeing. There's a real disregard for legal norms in immigration enforcement right now. And I don't share this to scare people, but to be real. So I think we're just about out of time, but just want to emphasize ILAP is here to support members of our local immigrant communities. You can find us at ilapmaine.org.
All right, and thank you. We do need to wrap up. I know a lot of folks are sharing stories of what they've seen and heard, so thank you for sending those in, and sorry we didn't get to you. Thank you for joining us today, Melissa. Melissa Brennan is the co-legal director with the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project, or ILAP. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, and tomorrow on the program, don't miss a special Best of Maine calling program with excerpts from several popular past shows. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.